Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Football in H-Town is on the rise.
I love D'Amico Ryans, man. I tell you what.
H-Town, I'm back.
Our guy B. Scott has all the latest from the gridiron.
I don't see no bitches nowhere around here.
It's time for your weekly Texans report.
You ain't laying down for nobody.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, it's 4:40. It's a Wednesday. That means we have a Texans report. Usually, this is a day where we hear from D'Amico and CJ, but everything is pushed back with Monday night football happening, so that will happen tomorrow. But we've heard from D'Amico plenty of times this week and since the game ended. And I saw you sent out a tweet last week about on Sunday, maybe you drank too much of the Kool-Aid. And I know you were leaning Texans when we talked last week. Just from the last game, what surprised you the most? Or what part of the Kool-Aid do you think you drank too much now after watching one game?
Yeah, so I got two separate answers for that. I think what surprised me the most was actually that the secondary had its moments where, look, you talk about this being the best secondary in the NFL or possibly the best secondary in the NFL. They did not necessarily look like that. I understand the defense overall performed well, only held the team to 14 points. And if there was a win out of the game, it probably would be overall the defensive effort, only holding the team to 14 points. You like to think that your offense could back you up enough where you could win a game like that. But to me, it was still disappointing from a secondary standpoint. And some of the stuff that D'Amico talked about earlier in the week with their eye discipline and some of the more, I would say, game-deciding plays later on in the game, the secondary did not necessarily meet or live up to the expectations in that game. That's the part that surprised me. The part about drinking the Kool-Aid, though, was the offense. Like, I had sold myself over the last few weeks. All of us have done shows together where I talked myself into this reconfigured offensive line. I had talked myself into the physicality, some of the stuff, Clint, that you talked about when we first went out there to training camp and kind of could see them establishing this new brand of football of, hey, everything's going to start up front. We're going to run the football. It's going to be a kind of more of a physical football team. I think I bought a little bit too much into that before I actually saw it. That was the Kool-Aid that I thought I drank a little bit too much of.
You know, what did you think? Because I think defensively, the overall production or lack thereof by the Rams, I think, was really impressive. I think this Rams offense is going to end up being one of the better offenses in the league. That's an impressive group. And they are elite in some of the different operational stuff, processes that we see the Texans struggling with. They are absolutely elite. So to hold that group to 14 points, I think, was really impressive. But to your point, you know, I think Kamari Lassiter got his eyes in the backfield one time in a man-to-man situation, gave up a touchdown. I think Jalen Petrie got his eyes in the backfield one time and gave up the nail in the coffin at the end of the game. Yep. I think Derek Stingley Jr. If we're being honest, for a Derek Stingley Jr. standard, I think he got abused a couple of times, three or four different times. He got targeted a couple of times. What do you attribute that to? Because that is not, you know, I expect, hey, man, Jalen Petrie's in man-to-man coverage and he just 20 yards downfield, they ran away from him. Or Kamari Lassiter just, hey, man, doesn't have that top-end speed that some corners have, and so they ran a go route by. I don't expect what I saw from some of those key defenders in that secondary. What do you attribute that
to? Yeah, so as disappointing as it was to see, I am going to attribute it, at least for now, as we sit here going into week two, I'm going to attribute it to I don't know if rust is the right word, but still kind of getting the hang of it, still kind of getting into the swing of things, I think is what I'm going to. Now, if it becomes a pattern, it becomes a trend, then we got bigger questions to answer. But right now, I'm willing to give them a little bit of a pass for it, even though we can acknowledge that there were parts of it that were it was really up and down, because there were moments when they were really on top of it.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that's what helped them hold the Rams to only 14 points. But when it fell out the bottom, it really did, you know. And so that, and I think that's what tilted the game.
Well,
a lot
they
of ways.
Look, they got some special teams, you know. Grace, they got a couple of big plays offensively that got called back that probably would have bust that thing open. But I'm glad you said that, because that's my take on it. I do wonder, guys, how much, like, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, we walked over there every day at practice and watched him just abuse the quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. And so how many times did Nico Collins really get to do work on the flip side, when did Derek Stingley really see a quarterback-wide receiver combo where we're attacking your ass? When did Kamari Lassiter get held accountable? When did Jalen Petrie actually get targeted throughout camp, given how we watched the quarterback and the O-line struggle so much?
And
so
the pressure was good.
I agree with you, my
The
point.
Pressure was good from the Texans, but it wasn't overwhelming. It wasn't overwhelming to just, hey, they're not going to be able to operate.
And I think the other side of that is pressure was fine from the Texans, but also kind of to Clint's earlier point about this being a better operation, a more fine-tuned operation between Sean McVay, Matthew Stafford, who's been doing it for 100 years now. Like, you could watch the Rams and see, oh, that's not the offense that the Texans had been practicing against all throughout that the Texans defense had been practicing against throughout training camp. It's not necessarily a slight, but it is to acknowledge the Texans offense, long way to go, which we saw that play out on the field, and, you know, versus the Rams offense that is pretty much already established and is what it is.
Yeah, B-Scott here with this Texans report. Well, let's move to the other side of the ball. The offense obviously was the thing that struggled, and the biggest thing that we were talking about all offseason long, Nick Caley, but more importantly, the offensive line. And we got our first taste of it. There were some shuffles and even more shuffles in the game. Your thoughts of their performance, and are you getting more concerned at this point after game one of watching what they look like in this game against the Rams?
So the part that I was okay with was the actual play calling itself, for the most part. I mean, I think every game with pretty much any play caller, maybe outside of Shanahan and McVay themselves, but for the most part, you can pick apart a play or two here or there where you're like, I don't know about that one, and agree to disagree. But for the most part, I was actually okay with the play calling. The part that really got me, and I was on this when it seemed like it was going to go in this direction toward the end of last week, when we saw Ed Ingram pop up on the injury report, it was that they were more than likely going to do this offensive line shuffle. And, man, I just don't like it. And I'm not going to pretend like that's what would have won or what actually lost them the game. I actually think that they struggled enough. It's hard to be like, to come in here and be like, man, they were Ed Ingram away, or they were a Juice Scruggs away.
Yeah.
Or, man, you put Ed Ingram and Christian Kirk in the game, and they are going to score touchdowns, and this thing is going to look a whole lot better. I don't want to lie and like, over-talk it and overdo it, but it also seemed like that's just a self-inflicted wound that you don't really have to go with. And that, look, if they think that their best five is playing musical chairs once one guy goes out, who am I to argue any different? I'm just saying, if you just look at it from a math standpoint, one guy goes down, but three guys have to sub.
Yeah.
That math does not math to me. So, like, where would you prefer to take your hit once you have to put in a reserve, right? Would you prefer to take it in three places or just the one spot where you need the reserve? And so, to me, even if you think that Cam Robinson is a better left tackle than, let's say, Juice Scruggs is a right guard, does that offset the fact that you have to move Arianti Urshery from the left to the right, where he's more comfortable, to where he's probably less comfortable no matter what he says? Does that supersede the fact that Titus Howard's probably a better tackle than he is a guard, even though you realize and know that he can play there?
Yeah.
On top of the fact that now you're inserting a backup who was Cam Robinson, who lost his job to the rookie that was at left tackle to begin with. So where would you prefer to take your L? How would you like to pick your poison? To me, I would rather just put in one reserve instead of making three people do something different.
Well, I think I love your point, and I think it's one of a few that just make it significantly more difficult on Nick Caley, right? I mean, now think about what you're saying. Like, going into that game, ideally, if you just plug Juice Scruggs in at right guard, you go, hey, I got a left tackle that's a rookie, I got to protect him. When you go to switching, if you didn't know it up front, you damn sure knew it early in that game. Hey, man, I got to help Cam Robinson over there. He is either sick, out of shape, or just not very good. Like, something's wrong over there. Oh, by the way, you still got that rookie over on the right side you got to take care of. Oh, by the way, your center just got hurt.
Yep.
Right? So, I mean, you like that offense, think about the running back's decision. Hey, Kaylee, man, we're gonna get four different running backs touches instead of just putting one in there and letting him call plays and letting him design an offense around that particular guy. Right? I mean, and think about the lack of the Nico package I was talking about, of like not using your best, really your only healthy weapon that can hit his head on the goalpost. Like all of that in itself, B. Scott, you've heard us talking about it. Like all of that is an issue. But then when you put it all together, it's like, hey, man, you got this dude over here who never called plays trying to manage all that yeah. stuff.
Well, and you've already got real actual problems. It does not make sense to me. Right. For you to create them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So now you're creating more problems than yeah. you're fixing. You know, the whole yeah. one step forward, two step back mantra, right? To me, that's what they were doing with some of the decisions they made outside of some of the already built-in challenges that they faced.
What do you think on that running back front, what do you think we see moving forward? Do you think we see more Nick Chubb?
Look, I think we see more Nick Chubb, but I also don't think we see – So can these things exist in the same time that we see more Nick Chubb, but we don't see less Dari Ogunbowale? Because I feel like it seems like they trust Dari Ogunbowale in a way that perhaps others do not. And look, I don't completely knock it. I think that they're kind of in a rock and a hard place with Joe Mixon not being. That was a big part of their plan, I think. And they probably just miscalculated that or did not anticipate that whatever's going on with Joe Mixon, it would be as serious as it is. But man, like... I've been saying this, like I don't feel comfortable with the idea that we're gonna treat Nick Chubb like it's 2020, or that he's gonna have to be the bell cow. In an ideal world, you do have a committee and you're not running Nick Chubb into the ground, but I don't know what kind of options they got. If Damian Pierce is gonna be ineffective, Dari is Dari, you know, like I prefer to see more Nick Chubb than more Dari, but I don't know if that's gonna yeah. be the case. So where do you go from there? Does Woody Marks get a more prominent role? It's unclear on exactly what direction they're going
to
go in there.
I mean, the right football thing to do, right? I mean, that makes sense, is you play Nick Chubb and then you have a guy, whoever your second best is, that is a guy that now this guy's going to be my, hey man, Nick's tapping his helmet. All right, get in there. We trust you. If that were the role that Dari's in, that's fine. But it's planned from jump. Hell, Nick D'Amico said it in his postgame presser, or maybe it was his Tuesday presser. He said, oh, no, the plan was to get all these running back rotations, get them touches, get them in the game. For what? You ain't that good.
Yeah.
You ain't good enough to go out there and get four different dudes touches. But
to me, Clint, that's the rock and the hard place, because I agree with your point. I don't think you're good enough to do exactly what you're not good enough. Okay, let's just establish that. You're right. But at the same time, Nick Chubb at this stage in his career, and then Joe Mixon is out. Like, I think they're playing a little bit scared there and trying not to overdo yeah. it with Nick Chubb. And I, for one, understand it. Not only understand it, I kind of agree with it, even if I don't like what that leaves you with. I don't like it, but this is where we are. But you do need to establish some sort of pecking order. It can't just be, oh, we're just kind of just throwing it out there.
But B, you got to know who you are. Like, I mean, your opportunities to score points with this offense are going to be few and far between, and it's really almost by design given your defense and everything. And now you're telling me as an offense, well, I can afford to do the offensive line stuff. I can afford to get multiple. I can afford to go out there and have Damian Pierce drop a freaking swing pass dead in his chest and not expect to pay for it down the road. I can go out there and hand it to Dari Ogunbowale on third and one in a short yardage situation in a one-score game, and it don't work out, and I can afford to do those. Like, those are the kind of things to me that, like, I mean – Right, I mean, you got to look up at some point and be like, Nick's got to be like week six. Hey, boys, y'all are wearing me the hell out.
But look, as long as Joe Mixon is going to be out and not available to you, fact of the matter, they need Damian Pierce to not be bad. They don't have enough guys. Like exactly what you just said.
I got to find out what Nick's got.
But I don't think that they're good enough to not use Damian Pierce, and they might have to. But that's gonna be a bad numbers game, because now you're relying on Nick Chubb, who's older and injured, and you're relying on a rookie in Woody Marks, and then of course Dari Ogunbowale.
I tell you what, I'll take a Damian Pierce start week six if that means they commit to Nick Chubb and his legs fall off.